Hey everybody, this is Mark Ashton coming to you live, well actually no, not live, recorded from the Detroit International Airport. What am I doing in the Detroit Airport, you might ask? Well, besides recording a Project 4.4 accelerator, we're on our way to Beijing, China, and some of the next accelerators you see will probably be from there. But for today, I'm just recording this one in the airport while we have a five-hour layover. So, it's May 14th, and we just read 1 Kings 8 and 2 Chronicles chapter 5 and 6. In the fourth year of King Solomon's reign, which began about 971 BC, the building of the temple began, just as David commanded it to begin. Now in the 12th year of Solomon's reign, that's 8 years later, the temple is completed. And today what you read about in your accelerators is the party that came as a result of the celebration for the building of the temple. The day of dedication finally arrived, the great convocation was scheduled in the 7th month of the year, right at the time of the Feast of the Tabernacles. Everybody was there. The whole nation turned out, from small to great, from rich to poor. Everybody came in order to dedicate the temple. And of course, the high point of the whole deal was when they brought in the tabernacle. It was brought in, nothing like this had ever been done before. There were many of the utensils from worship that had been preserved from the tabernacle, and all the furnishings were replaced with ones that were newer, bigger, and grander, except for one piece of furnishing. And that was, of course, the Ark of the Covenant. Now, the importance of the Ark of the Covenant is self-evident. It's the most important thing in the whole nation of Israel, the most important thing in their history. The account tells us that it contained the Ten Commandments, it contained the staff of Aaron, and it contained a pot of manna that was preserved all the way back from the time when they were wandering in the desert. Just as David had brought the Ark to Jerusalem a generation before with a wonderful celebration, well, at this time, the Ark is moved from the place where David had placed it and now brought to its final resting place inside the temple, which had been built to house it and to house the worship of the one true God. Now, there's an interesting comment that's made in the text about the length of the poles. Perhaps it's there for us to understand that all the rules that had been laid down by Moses were still being kept. This is especially important concerning what happened to Uzzah. Remember when David had the Ark of the Covenant moved towards Jerusalem? They did it on a cart instead of with the poles, and Uzzah reached out and touched it, and he was struck dead in that moment. That's because he was using a cart and not poles. And so they want to point out very clearly that this time they used poles to move the Ark of the Covenant. The rule was actually extended to a bigger rule from the time when Moses did, so that they could be very clear that the poles will remain in the Ark of the Covenant and not be taken out from it from that point forward. Well, after the Ark had been installed, the cloud of the glory of the Lord filled the house. That visible symbol of the presence of the Lord confirmed to Solomon and to the people that God was pleased with what happened there when the tabernacle had been dedicated in the book of Exodus. However, that cloud didn't stay visible to the people. So on that special day of dedication, the glory of God, the Shekinah glory of God, entered into the temple, and the people literally, physically saw it. Imagine how awesome it would be to be there in that very day. As for after the dedication, it was able to be seen only by the high priest when he entered the Holy of Holies on the Day of Atonement. All right, little break here. I want to say a special thanks to Allie Pointer, who's about to run into something. So I'm going to have her move over this way. There you go. She's my camera person. Now that way, Allie. There you go. She's my camera person. She's walking backwards while I'm doing this whole video accelerator. All right. So, interestingly, 1 Kings doesn't tell us much about the response of the people, but the parallel account in Chronicles does, telling us that all the Levitical singers, and Asaph, and Heman, and Jeduthun, and their sons and kinsmen were clothed in fine linen with cymbals and garments all over the place. Slow down, move a little bit this way, there you go. We're running into a crowd of people that I just don't want Allie to run into. But this is keeping the video, just the accelerator, a little bit more exciting than usual, isn't it? So here we go. All right, it's more clear right now. Okay, so
The singers made themselves heard with one voice. The trumpeters all blew their blast at the same time. There was a fantastic celebration, a party like had never been seen in Israel up to this point, and all the people of Israel rejoice. Well, the high point of the whole celebration is Solomon's prayer. And oh, does he do an amazing job with that. You'll notice that it came about with a certain degree of content. First of all, Solomon praises God for his uniqueness and for all of the things that he's done for the people of Israel. After that, he thanks them for the place that they're in at that time. Now, you'll note that he points out himself that God is so huge that he can't dwell inside the temple. He is the infinite, almighty, all-powerful God. How could he live inside the box? And everybody knew that God was way bigger than the heavens, so of course he's way bigger than this temple. But for God's own reasons, he allowed his name to be dwelling in that very place for the people of Israel. I love the pattern that's there in this. First there's worship, then there's intercession, and then the third thing is he asks for God's blessings. That's his petition. That's a great way for you to model your prayers as well. First worship, and then intercession, and then petition, asking for things from God in that moment. All right. Well, it's clear from a consideration of Solomon's prayer that in his mind at least, and therefore in the minds of all Israel, prayer is central to the part of the worship of God. This is important to us because in all our readings through the book of Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers, through all of our understanding thus far of the sacrificial system, we could be distracted from the idea that prayer is the central centerpiece of worship. In this day, they had prayer. They also had sacrifice. And of course, the number of sacrifices was enormous this day. But once again, prayer was the center of everything. This is a very biblical concept that we find not only in the Old Testament, but we find it in the New Testament as well. Prayer is the way that the people live by the promises of God and the way by which God's promises are activated in our lives. Now I pray that your life will be a celebration, like the celebration for the temple. And I pray that right at the center of your life will be prayer and the Spirit of God. God bless you from Detroit International Airport. We'll see you again tomorrow.